Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, July 24th, 2018. Aid workers are evacuated from South Sudan.
According to OCHA figures, that 197 NGO workers in Mabano would like to relocate to Juba this morning.
And South Sudanese police officers get their jobs back after an investigation.
20 of them, they are going to be reinstated. 10 are missing. We do not know whether they don't want to attend this reviewing process.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. More than 100 humanitarian workers working in Mabon County have been relocated to Juba following violent attacks yesterday on aid workers and their property by rowdy young people. The Mabon youth accused international NGOs operating in Upper Nile failing to employ the sons and daughters of Mabon County. Richard Rauti, Assistant External Relations Officer with the UN Refugee Agency, says the aid workers were temporarily relocated to Juba for safety precautions. He says Monday's attacks traumatized workers operating in Mabon.
As of today, all our partners on the ground, a lot of them have resorted to relocate their staff from Mabon to Juba. At the moment, what we know so far, according to OCHA figures, that 197 NGO workers in Mabon who would like to relocate to Juba this morning. However, for us at UNHCR, we are still monitoring the situation. We have not yet made a decision to relocate our staff on the ground. But it's something that we, as a management, will discuss.
What is the impact of this relocation? I know that aid agencies have been providing life-saving services in South Sudan for quite a long time. How is this going to impact the work of NGOs in Mabon?
Of course, the impact on the operation of refugees in Mabon will be a lot, in a sense that a lot of these people are the people who deliver services to refugees on a daily basis. So we will imagine their absence will create some vacuum. But we hope that as we continue to engage the local authorities and the Commission of Refugees Affairs on the ground, the whatever grievance the youth took violently will be addressed quickly, and then those who are locating will soon return to Mabon, and our operations will resume as soon as possible. But of course, the relocation does not mean that UNHCR is suspending any operation in Mabon. It is just a safety measure that is being undertaken.
What are the local authorities in Mabon telling the UN? It appears from the pictures I saw yesterday, looks like the mob were given a blank check to do as they wish, burning UN property without anybody stopping them. What are the authorities in Mabon telling you?
Yesterday, everyone was busy trying to assess the damages and make sure that the safety of the staff are on place. As soon as we are waking up and the offices are opening, we will know the position of the government today. And of course, we've been engaging the government already since yesterday. The county authorities and the provisional army commanders who are at the UNHCR premises to assess the damages themselves. So far, we do not have the official position or statement from the government. But we hope today something will happen, or they will say something about what has happened and what they are doing. But of course, they will always be there to provide security and safety for the refugees and the humanitarian workers on the ground. So we will continue to engage them in that fashion.
Is there any information on the level of damage to NGO property in Mabon?
I do not have the figures for the NGOs, but what I know is that the UNHCR compound, our offices and the residential facilities were damaged. Our vehicles were damaged. The damages include like windows being smashed for the vehicles and then the residential accommodation and offices. That's what I do have so far, but I'm sure as we put together the damage assessment for the NGOs and others, by the end of the day, we will know the overall assessment of the damages caused in Mabon to other humanitarian actors.
How many UNHCR vehicles were damaged yesterday?
All of our vehicles have been damaged, smashed, windows smashed. Only one was burnt down.
How many vehicles are we talking about?
We do not have the figures yet, but what I can tell you that all our vehicles were damaged in a sense of the windows smashed.
What is UNHCR doing in Mabon County?
We have more than 100,000 refugees from Nuba Mountains. That's Sudan. Nuba Mountains, that means South Kordofan and Blue Nile. These are refugees who have fled violence between the Sudan government and SPLM North. Since 2011, they've been living in Mabon in four camps: Yusuf Batili, Jederesa, Kaya, and Doro. So these are the refugees we are providing service to them and life-saving support. That include education, health, wash, of course, livelihood through the support we give for their, you know, income-generating activities and so forth. So, of course, we do not work on our own. We work with partners who implement projects on our behalf and also other UN agencies on the ground. So that's what we do in Mabon. And of course, the key issue is the protection of refugees to ensure that they have a dignified living condition in the refugee camps that we have set up for their temporary accommodation, hoping that situation will improve back in their place of origin and they will have a dignified return to their place of origin.
That's Richard Rauti, Assistant External Relations Officer with the UN Refugee Agency. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Juba earlier today. The police chief in Jonglei State has reinstated 20 police officers he fired more than a month ago. The officers were accused of failing to obey orders and perform their duties. The officers were rehired after state lawmakers intervened on their behalf. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Police Chief Major General Chola Tim Jonget said 53 men and women were deployed in Borsat County to keep the peace after repeated intercommunal clashes occurred in the area. Some officers reportedly fled their duty stations, but others insisted they continued to do their job, but were fired anyway. State lawmakers summoned Major General Jonget to Parliament to explain his decisions and ordered him to carry out a full review of the matter. Jonget says an investigative committee he formed determined that some of the fired officers did nothing wrong.
A committee to review this dismissal, it is actually we did it. The result was 20 of them, they are going to be reinstated. 10 are missing. We do not know whether they don't want to attend this reviewing process or what. That is what we are not sure about it. 23 is still to go. They are completely or for good are dismissed.
Kuala Bol Ayom, acting speaker in the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, says lawmakers welcome the police commissioner's move to reinstate the 20 officers.
On behalf of the assembly, I can appreciate this decision. And I'm actually very happy. And the assembly will be very happy. Because what we told him at the time is to review. To review his order and decision. To see whether the decision was right or not. And if you found that there is a part of the decision which was not correct, then it is good now to rescind his decision and then try to reinstate the officers who were found innocent.
Jonget had his warning for the reinstated officers.
We welcome you, especially those who are going to be reinstated. We welcome you. But you all be very careful in your work and duties. Duties are very clear of the police. We are here to keep safety of the people and property. And the government installations, and to protect or to enforce law and order.
Jonget is also warning Jonglei state officers that some of them could lose their jobs in a nationwide screening exercise aimed at reforming the police, per President Salva Kiir's orders.
There is There is. And even I declared to them yesterday in a general parade in Tibet, there is will be. And it is coming from Juba. It is not we who are going to conduct this screening. It is a screening coming from Juba. And who is not going to attend this? We know he's not longer going to be a member of the police.
Reinstated officer Sergeant John Buhr says he appreciates being reinstated onto the police force.
It is a good decision to bring back some police officer to service. We have complained about the dismission. I am happy to be back. I will not disagree to the question if I don't perform my duty. But the problem was that Patricius seemed not to be follow correctly.
Buhr says he is ready for redeployment either to his former location or new one to resume his duties as a South Sudan police officer. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
The UN Migration Agency is launching an appeal for more than $22 million to provide life-saving assistance for hundreds of thousands of people displaced by communal violence in southern Ethiopia. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
Fighting among local communities over pasture land and water resources along the border of Ethiopia's Gedeo and West Guji regions has displaced some 970,000 people since April. The spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Joel Millman, says this rapid displacement has resulted in the loss of livelihood, a disruption of services, and significant damage to infrastructure. He says the agency does not have enough money to deal with a crisis of this scale. He says the appeal will assist 400,000 displaced in the Gedeo and West Guji regions over the next 6 months. Millman tells VOA people are living under very precarious conditions, so more than half of the $22 million appeal will be used for emergency shelters and non-food items.
People are sleeping in the open. They have a single sheet of tarpaulin, often sleeping in dirt or mud underneath them. So shelters, of course, are the utmost importance. It's the rainy season, and people left, usually carrying nothing but what they were wearing. So we know they're in need of everything.
Millman says people are clustering in different reception areas seeking help of every kind. He says IOM will provide assistance to the displaced in collective sites as well as to those living in host communities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States has responded by announcing it will donate $170 million in emergency food and nutrition assistance, life-saving medical care, shelter, and other programs to support the people of Ethiopia. The U.S. is urging the Ethiopian government and other donors to step forward to meet the needs of millions of vulnerable Ethiopians. The United States government is the largest donor of humanitarian assistance in Ethiopia, just as it is in South Sudan. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A new way drug abusers are sharing their drugs has health professionals worried. Find out what it is when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you smile?
What makes me to smile is that whenever I am happy, I must express my feeling in terms of smiling.
When I see my friend is happy. And if he or she doesn't have any problem, I always do feel happy and I will smile. It is also an answer for him to know that I'm happy because of his or her situation.
What makes me smile is, when there's something so funny, when there's some funny things happening, amused you, actually, you need to smile.
Something funny. When I hear something funny, yeah, that's it.
I'm just a joyful person, and mostly what makes me smile is if what I am doing has given me an achievement.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. And today we're talking about an alarming trend among some drug abusers. Drug addiction is still a reality and becoming a bigger challenge in South Africa. A new way of sharing illicit drugs has made it even more complicated. From Johannesburg, Thuso Kamalo looks at the work of those who have taken it upon themselves to fight drug abuse.
32-year-old Sibusiso Vilakazi is a former drug addict living in Johannesburg. For the past 2 years, he has lived a clean life. He says he decided to quit doing drugs and pursue photography after seeing his life was falling apart. Now he's back to the streets, not for more drugs, but to persuade those still hooked to quit as well. He counsels them, buys them a little food, and urges them to go to rehabilitation centers. When they are sick, he urges them to go to the clinic.
They know about the dangers. They know what the drugs are doing to them. But then some of them, they're like, there's no need for me to stop because I'll go back to reality, go back to my problems and stuff. So they think that by taking drugs, it's eliminating their problems.
His biggest worry is the latest method of taking these drugs, popularly known as Bluetooth. This is a method where an addict injects a drug into their bloodstream and other addicts draw out his blood and injects it into their own bloodstream. With Nyaope, a concoction of dacha, heroin, antiretroviral drugs, red poison and acid being the most popular drugs amongst the youngsters, Vilakazi says he fears that if they survive the fatal effects of the drug's ingredients, they are likely to contract HIV and other blood-transmitted diseases such as hepatitis. His message is slowly finding acceptance to his friends. Walked by a friend into drugs, 23-year-old Sienna Nighton says he now spends each day searching for money to feed his addiction. He is grateful people like Vilakazi have encouraged him to find other means of making a living instead of stealing. And Nighton says the will to quit drugs is gradually overwhelming him.
It is a dream for me to change right now because my life is terrible because I can't do another things, you know. I'm always running after my addictions.
He is already warning those not hooked never to try drugs, especially the youth.
Stay away from the drugs, don't try the drugs, and don't even wanna look at them.
Law enforcement officials in Johannesburg are also pursuing drug peddlers with the hope of stemming out the drug supply. Wayne Minar, spokesperson of the Johannesburg Metro Police Department, has ordered his cops to sweep the streets clean from drugs.
We want to get our city to be beautiful. All the bylaws must be obeyed.
Martin Zygmunt, a volunteer at a drug addicts rehabilitation center in Hillbrow, Johannesburg, says the war against drugs can still be won as long as those that are hooked are willing to change.
It sounds hard, but they really need to go really to the bottom until they realize that they need to change, and then they come and then they're also willing to push through and get their life back.
And Vilakazi says one day he hopes to have his own rehab center that will be a life-saving home for all those who are now slaves of illicit drugs. Thuso Kamalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Still on health, the outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo is officially over. The DRC and the World Health Organization made the announcement today. They say quick action after the outbreak was detected in late April and the use of a vaccine prevented a full-fledged epidemic. Officials declared the outbreak over after 42 days passed with no new cases, the equivalent of two incubation periods. The ninth outbreak of Ebola in the DRC killed 29 people, and there were concerns that it could have spread widely after it jumped from two remote villages to Mbandaka, a regional transport and trade hub. WHO says 24 people survived the virus, which causes hemorrhaging, and that more than 3,300 people were inoculated with the vaccine. The same vaccine was first used toward the end of the West Africa outbreak in 2014, which killed more than 11,000 people. Dr. Ibrahima Sochi-Fall, the Regional Emergencies Director for WHO, spoke with my colleague Paul Alexander about how the outbreak was contained and the lessons learned.
Today is an important day for DRC and the international community since the Ebola outbreak was declared over.
So how did the lessons that were learned in the big West Africa epidemic help in dealing with this outbreak?
We realize that countries and partners expect WHO to play a more operational role. We went for deep reform of WHO World Emergency. So we are faster and stronger in terms of operation. To give you an example, the same day the outbreak was confirmed, we were able to do a rapid risk assessment, assessing the risk both for DR Congo but also for neighboring countries. So this fund was set up after the West Africa Ebola outbreak. As you know, it was only after 4 months we were able to mobilize money to respond to the West Africa outbreak. We are also using new operation procedure and using the incident management system to respond to outbreak. So within a week, we were able to deploy over 50 people, and overall, we deployed more than 250 people.
And what lessons have you learned for the next outbreak?
We are not just leaving DR Congo and the Equatorial Province the way it was before the outbreak. Last week, we have organized a review of the response with many partners, and we are also going to have a national review. We better prepare in line with international health regulation.
So how were things on the ground? Because there were reports of a lot of paranoia about the vaccine, that you're actually giving people Ebola instead of keeping them from getting it.
We were able to vaccinate over 2,300 people. These are contact and also frontline health workers at risk. So overall, it went very well. The vaccine was well accepted. And more positively, we didn't get any Ebola case from the people who have been vaccinated.
What was the most difficult aspect of dealing with this outbreak?
The main challenge was really accessing the most remote areas, like Itipo and the villages around. Because to access this area, you have to be deployed by plane, by helicopter, and also to take motorbike for investigation. It was also a big challenge to coordinate a number of partners.
There was the logistical issue of keeping the vaccine cold enough. Is there any way to help ease that issue?
Luckily, we were prepared enough to have everything we needed in terms of equipment. Of course, where we don't have electricity, it's very challenging, but we were prepared enough, knowing that in areas where Ebola happened, most of the time you don't have the electricity you need. So WHO, MSF, and all partners working on the vaccine were really prepared to operate in such a condition. So it's important really to continue investing on preparedness, because we know the risk and we know where they have gaps based on our independent evaluation. So we are really calling on partners, international community, to invest more on preparedness, strengthening the health system capacity for these countries to be able to prevent, also to be able to rapidly detect and respond to this type of outbreak.
That's Dr. Ibrahima Sochi-Fall from the WHO speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. In 6 days, Zimbabwe holds elections for local councils, parliament, and the presidency. Violence has marred past elections. So far, the campaign has been calm, but there are concerns violence could return. The Zimbabwe Republic Police says it is prepared to keep the peace this time around. Reporter Kudzai Zvenevashi has details.
Godwin Matanga, the Commissioner General for the Zimbabwe Republic Police, says so far, stakeholders have contributed to a relatively peaceful campaign season.
May I also thank all civic organizations, religious organizations, government and non-governmental entities, including the Peace and Reconciliation Commission, the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, for taking a robust stand in spreading messages of peace, tolerance, and non-violence throughout the election period.
Matanga says the police have taken steps to support a safe electoral process.
All our officers have been retrained on various aspects and laws governing the holding of democratic elections as well as the preservation of law and order in the country. Let me highlight that all police officers are now ready for deployment and they are fully acquainted with the role of police during the forthcoming harmonized elections, as well as their duties and responsibilities.
He says the force has increased its visibility in the general public and hotspots prone to violence have been placed under continuous monitoring. Matanga says election violations reported thus far have been relatively minor. Reported cases have largely concerned defacing, destroying, or covering up campaign posters. However, in June, a bomb exploded at a campaign event in what many saw as an attempt to assassinate President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is the candidate for the ruling ZANU-PF party. Matanga says investigations are still underway, but some suspects have already been arrested. Some members of the public, however, may be wary of any added police presence on election day. Zimbabwe's police, like its army, has long been seen as allied with the ZANU-PF and accused of repressing the opposition, often violently. Mnangagwa has repeatedly pledged this election, the first without Robert Mugabe as a candidate, would be peaceful and fair. The military ousted Mugabe after 37 years in power last November. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvenevashi from Harare.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Nyama Choma by Samba Mabangala. We've been listening to Samba Mabangla with the song Nyama Choma. I'm Ayan Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Let us know what you think about our show. You can find us at SouthSudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Moshi tanga, shinyanga zanzibar.